Welcome to the little red barn, where we're bouncing off the walls like a squirrel on meth with coffee to spare. We're racing through farm talk with energy to share. From tractors to livestock, we jump topic to topic, faster than a combine at harvest time. So buckle up, friends, and hold on tight. The Little Red Barn podcast starts now.
In this episode of the Little Red Barn podcast, the last episode of 2025, we're going to take a little bit of a year in review, look back, not much, because honestly, Charlie, not much happened this past year, right? There's really not much to review.
Absolutely no trade, no harassment.
No, nothing. Crops
no
were just, you know. You finished harvest early. It just, there's nothing to talk about.
Nothing broke at all.
Right. No, not at all.
No struggles at all.
We didn't piss off any other nations or countries or world leaders. So there's really not much to look back on. So we're just going to take a lighthearted approach to the podcast, the last podcast of 2025. Also discuss Christmas and the discussion that goes forward. Charlie, I want to talk shop tools this episode. What your go-to shop equipment is, what is something that is forgettable, what's the one thing that breaks the most. We want to talk through some of those things because it ties into my Christmas experience. So we're gonna go through several of those things and then try and get you on your way because you have already started. It is only the 29th, but you have started the preparations for the New Year's celebration. You've started already. You have all sorts of things planned for this New Year's, right?
Absolutely. It starts with hauling soybeans.
Oh, okay. Well, I was expecting fireworks. Any kind of fireworks?
Nope, not a whole
all
lot
right,
of fireworks.
Except for family-related, I suppose. But, okay, so your plans for the New Year are boring, which we'll go in with the rest of this podcast. Hey, thanks for joining us again this week, everyone. Little Red Barn Podcast brought to you by Mac America Ag Finance. More on Mac America in just a bit. We're glad you're here. Please like and subscribe. Good time of year to go back and catch some back issues as well. Charlie, this past week, honestly, probably on the old Ahuyan Homestead, was one of the slower weeks of the year. You did finish harvest just as we talked in our last podcast. You're done. There's cleanup. But generally speaking, you gave the hired folks the week off, Christmas this past week. Was it a rested and relaxful experience for you?
Well, as we finished up corn, yes, we got the corn out of the field. However, as always, there's more of the challenge afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
The grain dryer quit on us. So the grain dryer that we finished up with, that we hauled all our crop to, it decided not to fire up.
Okay. So what were you drying, though? Because if you were done, you'd put everything away, or did you have a bunch in the wet bin, a bunch yet to go?
A bunch in the wet bin.
Okay.
That needed to go through the dryer, and we were wrapping up that. And it was a last-minute deal where, hey, you know, we got the last 20 acres to... And our main dryer was full, and I said, well, we'll go to one of the other grain dryers, and we'll just put it in there. I'll start up the grain dryer later. And found out that go and pulled the lever for the grain dryer, and it didn't fire up like it normally does.
Hmm.
I don't know what the deal was.
So you haven't got that fixed yet?
Oh, that was right before Christmas Eve, and, you know, you really...
Yeah.
As the tech... that I called and bugged three or four different times that day, said, you know, Charlie, my mind's blown on why this thing won't start either. You cleaned out the burner.
Mm-hmm.
You're covered to toe from head to toe with corn dust. And it's Christmas Eve. And we're just not going to be able to reach anybody at the factory. We'll work on this problem some other day. And that's where we're
standing.
That's
where you stood. Yeah. Well, and I get it. Christmas is the one holiday that this country shuts down. You know, you even half the gas stations may not be open. Well, staffed. Pay at the pump, you can get gas pretty much anywhere. But you know, Christmas is that one holiday that pretty much everything just stops. So yeah, they'll probably get back to you here this week and see if we can get you going again.
Yeah. We'll get it figured out this week, but in the process of that, climbing up the grain dryer, I have a really bad grain dust allergy, and I didn't realize this. I didn't think anything of it at the time, Christmas Eve. I start climbing up this tower dryer, the inside of this tower dryer, and I started looking around and go, there is 6 inches of dust absolutely everywhere inside this grain dryer from drying grain. And I get to the top of the burner, and you go through the second stage of the burner. So I unlatched it, and I did my usual, this is where I started to go wrong.
Okay.
Hit it with my head going up and through there to kind of lift up because I'm holding an air hose, I'm holding a board so I can climb all over this grain burner that is literally out in the middle of the grain dryer. And when the grain dust went down my jacket, back of my jacket, down the back of my shirt, I knew I was in trouble.
Okay, so when you say you've got a grain dust allergy, it's not breathing, wheezing as much as contact.
It was breathing, wheezing a little bit.
Yeah.
But also, the grain dust just went right down the back of my neck. And I breathed it in, and I knew I was in trouble. Because normally, when I load out and work in a grain bin, I use a respirator.
Sure. Mask, respirator. Yep.
And even beyond just normal mask, I use a respirator a lot of times just to prevent the dust, inhaling the dust. And I didn't think at all putting that on. And as soon as that grain dust went down my neck, I was like going, oh, no. Oh, no. It's Christmas, and I'm going to have.
you were going to play Rudolph. You're going to have the red nose.
We had the Rudolph going on for sure. The red nose, the sinus congestion, and it didn't matter how many allergy pills I took that night. I was in trouble for the next
toast.
3 days.
Yeah. Well, if we can pause and stop there a little bit, it's intriguing to me, because we laugh about safety on the farm sometimes. I do stupid things on my farm operation. You do stupid things on yours. This is what we do. Sometimes we pay for them. Look, my father lost the top of his index finger on his left hand in a table saw accident. Okay, that's known, but why he lost finger on the table saw is because he attempted to do something stupid, cutting baler twine on a running table saw. So we all do stupid things at times, and we pay for them sometimes not. But when you said you were crawling around in this dryer and you've got inches of dust, we know on the farm, and we've heard stories of grain companies, grain elevators, flat-out explosions, little spark, big dust. Dust is extremely flammable. So it's intriguing to me to hear you talk about servicing this grain dryer being covered with dust, but also dust being on the inside the way it was. How do you approach safety, grain dryer safety, with dust like that? Was all that dust just from this season? Is it a once-a-year cleaning thing? Or, Charlie, did you have something get out of hand that you didn't even realize was there?
Normally, we go and we clean up the grain dryers pretty thoroughly before we even get started.
Okay.
At the end of the season, and then re-clean them before we get started. And even during the season, if we need to, we will actually drain out a grain dryer. Usually about the time that we start in, get done with soybeans, and start to head into the corn program, the last of the corn, we will actually clean out the grain dryers completely, get them cleaned up so that there's nothing inside or any debris in any of the columns so that everything goes smoothly. But this has just been running just normal grain into it.
But nonstop, because you've run a lot of grain through this dryer.
Right.
Was it to the point, I mean, as you look back on it now, you're climbing in and out, is it a problem? Are you guys worried next time you start it up?
Not really, because what we did is we said, you know what, we're just going to pull all the grain out of this facility that we were going to dry here. Our other grain dryer got caught up, and we just loaded everything out, cleaned out the dryer completely, shipped it off, and said, we'll get back to this issue at a later date.
So you'll fix it later, and it's as clean. It won't get fired up this way.
Right.
Because otherwise, if you were going to fire this back up, you would have had to clean it a little bit, right? If there was as much dust sitting there as you said, you would have had to do something.
Right. We would have to do something.
Yeah. Most grain bin fires, or not bin, grain dryer fires, do they happen because of dust, or is it something else? What's your experience not saying you have experience, lots of experience with grain dryer fires, but if we hear so-and-so had a fire at their grain bin, is it dust related? Is it that related? Or is it feed or other times related?
What we found out with our grain dryer fires, and we've had multiple fires, is that there's a plug someplace in a column that we don't catch, and then that column just overheats and then combusts.
Extra roasted grain in a column that just can't move it through.
Can't move it through.
Gotcha.
So, but we also found out that you do have to thoroughly clean. Our biggest grain dryer fire actually happened 2 days before my youngest son was born. And that was an extremely bad year for grain dryer fires. There were several of them. And that was an in-bend dryer where underneath the drying floor, it actually caught fire because we were pushing it too hard. But looking back at it, that floor was never removed for 30 years.
So it had all of the dust, the cake, and everything.
Absolutely everything. And when it ignited, it ignited.
And there's not many. Are many of those kind of drying set? Those aren't used much anymore. There's not a lot of whole bin drying apparatuses that are currently in use anymore, right?
Not that I'm aware of.
For that reason, exactly.
Right. There's no way to clean. It's hard to clean out underneath that drying floor. I mean, I never thought about picking it up and cleaning it. We always swept the bin out. We always treated it.
And drying floors are fine for just aeration. I mean, look, if you're going to want to do bottom aeration, have the drying floor in, and you can pump air through that grain just fine. But combustible heat underneath would be...
Yeah.
And that's why they're not used much anymore. They're just not.
And what we learned in all the fire incidents is that when we called the fire department out for the in-bend dryer, they didn't know any better, and we didn't know any better. We should have just started to unload the bin with the auger and just get it out of there.
Get as much out as possible.
Instead, they punctured the side of the bin and sprayed the whole inside of the bin with water, started pumping water into it, and 7 tankers later, and this stuff didn't stop burning.
Right.
Yeah. We had a whole nother issue.
Yeah, yeah. You probably don't use that bin anymore, do you?
That bin was gone. At the point where we were like, you know what, this thing's toast, and this was the original farm bin on the farm.
Gotcha, so gotcha.
I got pictures of this thing from the 1960s.
Wow.
And we ended up cutting big holes in the side of the bin. And the trickiest part of getting that fire out, to this day they talk about this with my firefighting friends, is that A, we were there 24 hours trying to get this thing out. B, we had to be very careful reaching in with a backhoe and dragging this corn out, being exhaustedly tired, trying not to hit the side of the bin, reach in with an extended hoe, and pulling that grain that's on fire out. But also, another thing that the firefighters went and saw was when they went in, even though there was no corn in it, it still ignited like somebody had like a whiskey bottle in there almost.
Right.
And it just exploded that whole floor. Even after a lot of the corn was out, it just lit up.
Well, because, again, you've got that dust, and you've got, you know. And the other thing that in a grain fire, and I go to, you know, I don't have a lot of experience with grain fires, but what I have been a student of, not because anything happened with us on our farm, but it was drilled into my head early with hay and hay fires, the same thing can work. In hay, you've got tightly compacted bales. So you've got pressure. You've got pressure involved. Well, and anytime you pile grain up, I mean, look, you're sitting at 56 pounds per bushel on corn. Well, if you've got 100 bushels, what have you got? You've got 5,600 pounds of grain. Well, you've got pressure. You've got compaction. So if you're burning and you're compressing and then you loosen that or change those things at all, it allows more air to get to a source and just boom, there it goes.
And that's what happened with that floor igniting, was just the air got to it and all of a sudden it was done.
Yeah. So, well, interesting. Well, I'm glad that you got over your itchies, and I'm glad that dryer is retired here for a little bit, and you're going to be able to finish out with the other one, right?
Yep. Ryan, there's more to this fireman story. Dear, no. That is very humorous.
Okay. Are you sure?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
You'll like this one. My grandparents were still around them, and they were on the big thing of we're going to go see the seven continents of the world.
Okay.
And they were down to their last continent, which was Antarctica.
Okay.
Now, if you remember right, my youngest son wasn't born yet.
Right.
So they were all excited. They're going like, hey, he's going to be born every day. So I happened to be sitting in the backhoe doing my turn of digging everything out. My grandfather calls me on my cell phone from Antarctica.
Okay.
He goes, so did the baby come yet? And I go, nope, I got a fire to deal with. I got to go. And I hung up the phone. That's all I said. Keep in mind, he's on a cruise ship in Antarctica.
In Antarctica, okay.
So about 5 minutes later, he calls me back and goes, Charlie, what fire?
Yeah.
I go, well, the grain bin's on fire at your house. I got to go. And I hung up the phone again. So he calls up my dad 5 minutes later because he's going like, wow, Charlie was really frantic and was very short. And he's never short with me. And my dad goes, he calls him up and he goes, hey, is there really a fire? Yep. You got good insurance on your house? Yep. Good. And he hung up again on my dad. So they didn't know what the conditions were like on their house and then that grain bin until they came back 2 weeks later, a week to their house.
Well, they
from Antarctica.
I'm glad that they didn't shorten their trip, because that would have been awful if they shortened their trip over it.
Well, there's no way they could have. They were on a cruise ship.
They got helicopters that can land on cruise ships. They could have gotten home if they needed to.
Yeah, they probably could have, but...
I mean, Antarctica is a long way away.
That'd be a heck of a way to get
back. Did they actually step off the boat onto the continent of Antarctica?
They did not, but they were very close. They could see the ice shelves.
Well, but that's in my mind, they didn't visit. They weren't there.
They weren't there.
They weren't there. If you did not set foot, you weren't there.
Well, they called it close enough.
Speaking of Antarctica, every once in a while, this I don't even know what his name is. The tractor zoom guy shows up on my old Facebook feed telling stories about different tractors. He's a good storyteller. I kind of like listening to him at times. But he talked about this girl that decided she wanted to drive a tractor from the Netherlands to the South Pole and started off on it and happened. And then she actually got – it was an old – like 1977 Deutz something open station that she started with. And the story actually, she caught people's eye, corporate eye, and Massey Ferguson, I think, is the one that actually came to the table with this dolled up special track that they actually drove to the South Pole. They got it across from South Africa, across to an Antarctic coastline, got everything dropped there, and they drove this thing across the Antarctic continent to the South Pole. Was there for a little bit, turned around, and drove right back.
Oh, my goodness.
It's quite the story. We've had a modern tractor that's driven all the way to the South Pole and back. Heated cab.
I hope so.
But it turned out to be a little bit of a study in, you know, in the engineering, you know, how diesel can operate at extreme temperatures and all of that. So it actually turned out to be pretty cool. But, yeah, they actually drove a Massey Ferguson tractor to the South Pole.
Where's our case guys at? Where's our driver?
They can't do it, I suppose.
Apparently.
Well, if John Deere did it, they'd want to do it with a big old 9RX quadra steer, and that would just be, you know, you could hurt some stuff down there with something that big. I don't know. I'm just making that up. But it was an interesting story. Speaking of interesting stories, so what you're carrying a board and an air compressor to the top of that grain dryer to work on it. As you go through the off season here, and I'm using the bunny ears for off season, we don't really ever have an off season. We have an infield season and a not infield season, and both of them are fraught with work. But in this off season, when you're spending more time in the shop than you are in other places, what are you doing? I mean, you said you're hauling soybeans this week, and you're going to be hauling corn and beans into January as well. But, you know, what's the – on Huyen Grain Farm, what happens in the shop here this time of year?
Usually the first thing that comes in is the combines. We go through the combines again and clean them up really good.
But not just clean. You're doing maintenance,
deep,
right?
Deep clean. And along with doing the combine inspection, and from there we're going to determine exactly how much money we want to throw at these combines at this point in time.
Are you relying on, I mean, again, so today's combines are not like the one that I have sitting out here, mechanical all the way through, a lot of electronics, a lot of sensors. So when you say combine inspection, how much of this is visual and trying to figure out wear and tear, and how much of it is just, I think you mentioned at the start of this podcast, this is the time of year you sit in the office and you're behind a computer half the time. So well, your combine inspections, are we talking sifting through data, or is it a lot of physical still?
It's a lot of physical. We bring in Don Olson from Bain Welker,
mm-hmm.
and he will go through the combine from top to bottom, literally, and produce usually a 4-page list of things
that
Charlie broke over the year. I'm hoping that page list gets a little bit.
Is it really that much? And how much of this, because we hear guys talk about this, and it comes down to planters too. We'll get into planters probably closer to planting time, but rebuilding this, redoing that, how much of what the combine guy tells you is true, Charlie broke it, and the rest is, well, you should consider such and such. You probably have another 200 hours on these, but they're showing it. How much of it is that? What's the divide on a yearly basis?
What I found is that when they come in and say something's about ready to fail, they've seen enough machinery that they know that, yes, that U-joint's about ready to fail because of the hours on the machine. It's
more about the hours of operation rather than the acres that goes over. So if they say something's about to fail and you're like, well, the plan for this year is only to use this one on 500 acres. They don't care that it's going to go.
Right. It's going to fail.
Okay.
A lot of what, for instance, on our track machine, our drive chain train that comes down from the top of the combine that drives the feeder throat, the header, we end up replacing that for the last 50 acres. Dad was very proud of me.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to replace the entire thing because we found that the failure, the U-joints were so bad and they were dry from not being able to grease them that they just needed to be replaced.
So if you would have replaced just the one that was causing the problem, it would have just led to increased
problems later on.
Well, and because one's working right, it amplifies something that's already started to not work right farther down.
Right. And it was all out of balance because of things were just, when the catastrophe happened, when it failed at one point, it ripped up all the stuff down the line. But a lot of what we've worked with is replacing elevator chains, looking at chains that are going to fail, unload chains if they're completely worn out, we'll replace those in the off season. A lot of rasp bars. I'm sure elephant ears is going to be a big one this year, mm-hmm. because it was on the list from last year and on being marginal getting through this year. And we said, well, let's give it a shot. And I'm sure that we'll have to replace some elephant ears and those case combines to get a cone. Take a lot of wear on the cones, so we'll inspect that cone pretty hard. Maybe install a cone guard or something like that in there.
So are failures or potential failures on today's combines still mostly mechanical, or has the electrification and sensors and all of that made electrical failures more of a problem?
I have not really seen a lot of electrical failures on it.
Okay.
What I've seen with the electronics on these flagship combines, more than anything after running them, is that they're going to stop you from having a problem.
Really?
And really prevent you from destroying the combine. Like, let's say you have a belt fail and you don't think about it, and you're running along and you don't notice that all of a sudden the engine temperature spikes.
Right.
Instead of overheating, it's shutting down the whole system.
So this driveline failure that you had to deal with the last 50 acres to go, right, did electronics shut you down and make you aware of the situation? Or was that just good old, hey, I hear something clunking?
There was no clunking. There was just failure, and it shut me down.
Okay. And the electronics shut you down, so you didn't continue to do more?
Correct. I couldn't continue on.
Huh. So you're... if I'm hearing you right, reading through the tea leaves, you're okay with all the electric gadgets on these things.
I am, and the reason why I say that is working with Don there, Bain Welker, he's done a good job of educating us on using the monitor and getting the most out of our monitors. Because on our Pro 700s, we can go in there and dial in and go, wait a minute here, I'm having an issue with the sieves. I'm not sure if they're working quite right. Let's dial in to see if those sieves are working perfectly like we want to. And you can use the monitor to diagnose how much those sensors on those sieves are actually working or not working. On the spreaders, is that spreader really working, or is this some other issue? And you're able to dial in on different sensors that are on the combine and monitor that particular item, whether it's the sieves or the spreader, the feeder house height. You can monitor everything independently on your monitor as you're going across the field, even, or as you're sitting there and seeing if everything is functioning right or if there's a bigger problem there.
So this combine maintenance takes you what? Does it take you the entire month of January?
It seems like it. But usually there's hauling involved, which
right, you
get pulled off the project. But usually I think that you can go through a combine in a week pretty easily and have it up and going.
Okay. So that's the inspection. If you have something to do, though, you got to tear it down and work a little bit longer. So
the inspection takes a day.
Inspection takes a day. All right. So you've got two of these to go through. What's the go-to tool in the shop this time of year?
You know, it's kind of humorous. My go-to tool is either I find the acetylene torch.
Oh, gosh, you're going straight to the big boy. Holy moly. All right. Or?
Or the air hammer.
All right.
Those are the big tools. Usually I go, well, one of those are going to fix the problem usually.
Well, I mean, I'm not surprised at the hammer. That's probably one of my go-to tools in the shop as well. But you went to the air hammer and the torch. The torch threw me for a loop. What's the most worthless tool in the shop this time of year?
Oh, geez.
You can't say everybody picks on the 10-millimeter socket. And I know that there's not that many 10-millimeter sockets on Case combines.
Nope, the 13.
True.
But it's either 13, 15, or 17, or 18,
mm-hmm.
19. But I really thought about this, trying to think through here, what's the most worthless tool in the shop. I'm beginning to think that small ball peen hammer, because you can't do anything with that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what else is there that... Usually I don't use a tape measure anymore either. But
well, I'm glad you mentioned tape measure because, look, I use tape measures a lot in the various things that I'm doing. But this question comes up, Charlie, because over on Christmas, you know, I was asked for a gift list for Christmas. I'm not a big Christmas gift-receiving guy. I would rather just not worry about anybody getting me anything. But, you know, the wife and the kids – I wanted to know. So I put together a list that was not very long, didn't have much on it. But one of the seemingly worthless tools in my shop as of late, over the course of the past 6 months to a year, has been tape measures. You just mentioned tape measure. Tape measure has been worthless because in order for a tape measure to serve me well, it needs to measure. That's fairly easy. But when you're done measuring, it needs to retract. And I had 20-foot tape measures, 25-foot. I had a 30-foot tape measure, all of them. They're all wrapped up with the measuring tape outside the case, wrapped in duct tape now to throw away because they all stopped retracting. So I put on my list a tape measure, 25-foot tape measure. And on my list also, some fleece-lined jeans, keep warm, keep protection, blah, blah, blah. And a couple other things, some ammunition for the guns and all that. And then I've also put on there funnels because I had just got done with harvest season here, trying to load hydraulic fluid into various tractors in various parts of the combine. I need funnels. Long funnels. So I put funnels on my list. Charlie, Christmas last Thursday, I received 7 25-foot or higher tape measures, 7 tape measures, and 15 funnels.
Now, did the tape measures get put away?
They are still working their way to different places. I'm going to keep some of them at home, but a large part of them are going to come to the farm here. Yes, they're put away. They're getting put in the drawers, but 7 tape measures. It became comical as I was opening gifts, and they knew it too. Everybody laughed as we opened another tape measure because ha, 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 daddy got tape measures. Tape measures and funnels. So I am replacing what seems to be a worthless tool here. It's not worthless from use. It's worthless because they won't last. And that's what I guess I don't understand is why quality has gone down so far in the tool realm. Flat-bladed screwdriver, for example, Charlie. What do we use those for?
Pry bar.
Pry bar, exactly. You didn't even hesitate. You went right to pry bar. I would have felt bad if you said to drive straight-bladed screws because nobody does that. They're pry bars. I have broken in the past 2 weeks 4 flat-bladed screwdrivers, using them as pry bars to try and. But that should not happen. Why does it happen? It's because tools are made like crap.
Well, it happens on our farm because usually you grab the biggest flat-bladed screwdriver you can, then you extend the length of the screwdriver via pipe.
Right.
Extension bar.
Right.
And then you break it.
Well, but that's the thing. I didn't even have a pipe on. Now, granted, I was working on smaller jobs. I was trying to pry apart. Let's see. What was I working on? I was working on brakes. And so I was trying to pry a socket. Because in order to get this bolt out on this brake caliper that I was working, it got stripped by the 15-millimeter socket. It was rounded off. So I took the US 9/16ths, I got it kind of on there, and then I took a 4-pound sledgehammer, and I just drove the socket on. And it worked. Bolt came out just fine. Well, then you have to get the bolt and socket separated. And I just went to get a flat-bladed screwdriver to pry that off. Broke it. Broke another one, and then I stopped breaking them. But why is stuff made so awful?
Because they go from China.
Exactly. I don't know. Maybe I should buy more expensive tools, but if I'm just going to break it, I guess I need to buy tools with warranties.
There we go. Screwdrivers with lifetime warranties. There's probably a reason why they don't have those anywhere.
Craftsmen. Craftsmen used to have lifetime warranty. They did not care how or why it broke. All you used to have to do, this is when you could buy stuff at Sears. Does Sears even exist anymore? Sears gone.
I don't think they do.
Okay, so it used to be Sears. You could walk in with a Craftsman anything, and if it didn't work, they would replace it on the spot. No questions asked. Screwdriver, we'd use it on ratchets all the time. You could go to an old farm auction and get and buy a lot of tools, and there might be a Craftsman ratchet in there that is oil, rusted shut. You dip it in oil and it still doesn't work. Walk into the nearest Sears and say, I need a replacement, and they'd do it.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the warranties that needed. I don't think anybody offers those kind of warranties anymore.
Gear Wrench offers that kind of warranty.
Gear Wrench has that?
And
but their line is so small. Gear Wrench doesn't do all tools. They just have
gear wrenches.
Gear wrenches.
But however, we use a lot of gear wrenches on our farm, and we've actually, over the years now, that we've actually figured out where we placed our gear wrenches, like in the, we usually find them in a tractor toolbox or whatever, rusted completely up. So we take it into our handy dandy CarQuest dealer, and they are nice enough to be patient enough with us to replace it. So I'm starting to see that investment pay off, where I bought these really expensive gear wrenches at one point in time and they failed, and we can actually go in someplace and actually get them replaced on hand.
I see that too in batteries, cordless tool batteries. I've had so many cordless tool batteries fail. I really wish there were warranties that are on cordless tool batteries right now. And I don't know why we can't get, I shouldn't say I don't know why. You mentioned why. It's just what passes for quality here in the country anymore kind of sickens me.
Yeah. I've actually gone away from certain tool companies even because of battery issues. I've gone from Brand X to Milwaukee and been a lot happier about it. But even you go online to Amazon, and sure enough, there's a knockoff battery from Milwaukee Tools. And I thought I'd be a cheapskate one day and try them out. And
you got what you paid for, didn't you?
Well, yeah, two uses, and they're in the trash can.
Yeah, I don't know. That's something I don't think these tariffs are going to fix at all, which, honestly, right now, I'm not sure the tariffs are fixing much of anything.
No, they're just a total pain in my backside at this point.
Speaking of which, another week has passed. I have heard nothing on bridge payment calculations. Have you?
The only thing I heard was they couldn't figure out how to do it yet.
Yep. And that's the same thing that we talked about on the last podcast. So maybe next week, maybe when we open 2026, we'll have something for you. But I guess I'm still in the – I'm not counting on anything right now. I don't really want anything anyway. But if they can't put together how it's calculated soon enough to have people know by the end of the calendar year, which they promised they would, then I think that we can just kind of see where this is going.
When we were talking at the Christmas dinner, believe it or not, this actually came up,
about
the bridge payments and tariffs and stuff. And I go, you know, if government just stayed out of things, it would go a lot better.
It's very libertarian of you, Charlie.
I know, and that's very hard coming from a diehard Republican.
Very libertarian of you. Well, you know, we'll kind of wrap it up here. You know, we've talked about interesting batch of things here.
Brian,
I know.
Your language.
It's,
jeez.
Oh, it's a family show. We've talked about an interesting batch of things here, but nothing really super pressing, and that looks to be the way 2026 will start off. One of the things that we are keeping an eye on, Charlie, you brought it up. We're wanting to do some research here, and we'll probably kick off 2026 talking. It's not just the U.S. where there seems to be a lot of strife in the agriculture industry.
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of things on the YouTube and on Instagram about European farmers being very upset about tariffs and culling of cows in France and even taxes in England. And let's just say they're a little bit more vocal and demonstrate their disgust with their government a little bit differently than what we do here.
Yeah, and I think that's what we're gonna dig into more of what's going on over there. But I think I want to compare and contrast as we kick off episode 120 to kick off 2026. 126. This is episode 119. So in episode 120, we want to talk about what's going on in Europe, but also compare and contrast farmer involvement and farmer interaction with government in Europe versus in the United States. And Charlie, this is what I want you to noodle on. I'm giving you homework for next week.
Here we go.
I want you to come in and tell us how you think it would go if the U.S. farmer did what the farmers in London and farmers in Paris, so England and France, are doing. Not just how it would go over with regard to our government, but how would farmers be viewed in the eye of the public, our United States public, if we did what they did? No, don't answer now, but that's going to be your homework. I want to put Charlie in the driver's seats of a tractor, looking at what they're doing over there and seeing if he can do it here.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm going to have to do some homework on that one.
It's food for thought, but it should be a very interesting conversation this next week. But until then, Charlie, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Ryan.
Do not blow off the thumb with those fireworks, okay? I know.
I was thinking shotguns, you know.
No, absolutely. Do not. Anything that fires up from a gun has to come down. We are not shooting any shotguns for New Year's. We just don't do that.
You know, chances are New Year's, I'm just going to be in bed and asleep.
Me too. I can't remember the last time I made it to midnight. It's been a long time. I think it was pre-kids.
Oh, wow.
I think it was pre-kid. It's been a minute. But Happy New Year, and we wish you from the Little Red Barn to all of you out there, Happy New Year. Like and subscribe. Don't forget about Mac America Ag Finance as well. If you've got some land purchases coming up in early 2026, and Charlie, I drove the back roads a couple of days ago. Gosh, there's a lot of stuff still up for auction around here. It's amazing the amount of land that has auction signs is sitting on it. So if you've got your eye on some, you want to get pre-approved for one of these upcoming land auctions, give Mac America Ag Finance Northern Indiana a call, 574-253-3433. They can get you squared away with an application. Express loan applications up to $3 million in financing on real estate and infrastructure. You can have your answer, positive or negative, in 24 to 48 hours. It just takes a couple years of tax returns and a balance sheet, cash flow. That's all they need, and they can get you rolling. Give them a shout. They'll get you worked through. Charlie, have a great finish to 2025. Keep that semi on the road. Bundle up, bud. It's going to be chilly here as we get there.
I'm glad it's going to get chilly because I got the ski passes.
Yeah, I was just saying, you need some snow to fall. They had some ice last week up there, but not enough snow, I don't think. So be safe, and we'll see you all in 2026. I'll pull the famous dad line out, Charlie. See you next year.
All righty.
This is the Little Red Barn.